Welcome to the Football Fans Podcast. We've got a special edition this week of the pod. We're trying to do this show for a little while, but a certain mic here has just been long, basically, and has been hard to track down. We're doing a show, on goalkeepers and modern day keepers. What are the skills required to be a goalkeeper and who are the best goalkeepers here? To do so, I've got former semi-pro goalkeeper Mike, as I mentioned. Mike, how are you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm all good, man.
Well?
Yeah, I'm good. Can't complain.
Good. You made it this time. Yeah?
Finally here.
Yeah, you're finally here. Wow. We've got Josh. Josh, you well?
Yeah, I'm doing well.
Good. He's a United fan. And we've got Batting for Kepa, a Chelsea fan, G.
I thought we were here to talk about strikers. I'm going home.
Goalkeeper, bro. Goalkeeper. And we've also got down the line a guy that actually did make it pro goalkeeping, David Priest. David, how you doing, my friend?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Good. Cheers for coming back on the pod, my friend. So let's get into it. I'll start with you, David. If you're not a modern day goalkeeper who's good with the ball at their feet, can you make it to the top?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, obviously, you've got to have a certain amount of talent with your feet. You know, the demands of the modern-day keeper are obviously a lot different than what they used to be. But now, it's not just a real holistic way of looking at football, sort of like with the feet and the hands. You've got to, first and foremost, be able to stop the ball. That's it doesn't matter how much we've gone about footballing goalkeepers. That has to be at the heart of everything. But also, it's now we're in a period of time where we're looking at keepers that fit certain styles of player as well. So, you know, just because you're not Alisson or Edison with the ball at your feet, it's you can still fit into a certain type of team. You know, you look at something like, I don't know, something like Jan Oblak, who's at the very top of elite football. He's not asked to do a lot with his feet in the short and medium range, but he's certainly one of the best goalkeepers in the world. The likes of Tom Heaton and Nick Pope, and they fit into the likes of Burnley's player that they used to in the last couple of seasons. Then, you know, the demands on you are totally different to a Man City or Liverpool goalkeeper.
Mike, do you think there might come a time, and maybe you've noticed it already, where people are being judged first and foremost on their ability with the ball at their feet?
Yeah, it's happening already. I'm doing my goalkeeping coaching badges, and they tell us the first thing to look for is their footwork. not just on the ball, but their footwork in making saves as well. It's all important. They look for people that are light on their feet. And most importantly, are quick in transition. Because essentially, you start the moves. Mm. So if you're as they call it, a sweeper keeper, and you're off your line quick, you can start a move and be quick in the transition. So that's the first thing they're looking for these days.
And do you like that? Do you like the fact that that's kind of where, as you said, you're seeing it, football goalkeeping is going, where that is almost as important, if not more important now, than keeping the ball at the back of the net?
I'm a bit of a weird one because I've always been like that anyway. I used to be called crazy. Josh, you've played with me. I used to be called crazy. I was always off my line because I was quick. It got me in trouble. I mean, it got me out of trouble, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it is good. I think it's good for the game. Mm. If you can, because sometimes a defender's under pressure. And if you're unsure about your keeper and, you know, you're trying to turn, you know, just so that guy that's hassling you and you got nowhere to go, you can always go back to your keeper and he can then start the next move. So I think it's good for the game.
Josh, is there a top keeper out there right now that isn't particularly good with their feet that you can think of?
Not particularly good. Yeah, I mean, David just mentioned Jan Oblak. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's not bad, but he's not. You know, Edison, David De Gea is not particularly great with the ball at his feet. He's good at saving shots.
He used to be, though, weirdly enough.
Huh?
He used to be decent.
He used to be okay. I think he's regressed a lot now. So, yeah, I think, you know, you can definitely be a dog. I'm more of a fundamentals person. You need to keep the ball out of the back of the net first. Mm. Like, shot stopping, making great saves, command of area would be the three most important things to me before your ability to pass the ball. I think your ability to pass the ball is an extra nice to have, but obviously it depends on what team you're playing in and the way they're playing. But it's similar to like what we were talking about. I don't want to bring it up defenders, but it's similar we talk about with defenders, like fullbacks. We had a conversation about Trent and Robertson.
Mm.
And I'm just a fundamentals person. Your fundamentals has to be
defending.
Mm. Like the attacking thing is the extra.
Mm.
Like to me. So to me, I I think it's very good. I do like keepers who can pass the ball. I do like keepers who can take pressures off the defence. But if this is why I have a bit of a problem with De Gea. It's not because of his ability on with his feet, but it's actually his command of area. I actually think command of area is really, really important part that it's kind of
overlooked.
Yeah, it's kind of overlooked these days because I think it takes so much pressure off your defense. I think that takes more pressure off your defense where you can come and claim aerial balls. Mm. You can come and kind of be in control of that kind of your box, your area, and kind of command your defenders.
I'm a big fan of Edison. I really rate Edison. Mm. Do you think his skill sets and what he offers with the ball at his feet are just as good, if not better, than what he offers in terms of saving shots? Because I've seen him make some incredible saves in his time at City, no doubt. But do you think City benefit more from what he does as a footballing goalkeeper than actually as a shot stopper?
Absolutely.
Basically, is he a special shot stopper?
Absolutely. It's difficult to say special shot stopper because we get times in the Premier League where you get 10 keepers who can all shot stop, and it is about the command of the area, as Josh said, and now it seems to be more moving towards being good on the ball. What I'd say, if you're Man City and things are going well, the action areas are going to be the other side of the pitch. So then shot stopping doesn't become as crucial as it would be for a team in a relegation zone. The hope would be if you're having such good possession, you're not going to have that many shots to face. Mm. And that is the point of Edison, because he contributes to that possession.
He's an 11th player.
He's 11th player. Mm. So then he kind of takes away the need for... But where it goes wrong is, like, let's say Kepa at Chelsea, for instance. So where we've been open, we're trying to play the Man City, but we haven't got the defensive element of it right. So then Kepa's just facing a whole barrage of shots. Mm-hmm. And you know what? He's got the lowest save shot percentage in the whole of the Premier League, which is really bad. But at the same time, you look at the shots that he faces, and about 8 out of 10 of them, I can't even blame him for them. They're just we're just so open, like he's got no choice. But yeah, he's the lowest out of save percentages in the whole league.
Wow. David, G mentioned Kepa there at Chelsea. Out of Kepa, Leno, Patricio, and Alisson, who I all believe came to the Premier the same year, or roughly the same kind of time, who do you think's had been the best out of those four goalkeepers?
I mean, obviously, the one who's made the biggest impressions, obviously, being Alisson in every aspect of his game. I think, speaking to a lot of people who watch Liverpool regularly, they're not just impressed by his distribution or his shot stopping or even dealing with crosses. It's his organisational skills. And from the very off, he was very vocal. And even in these big stadiums where, sometimes you can't hear yourself think on the pitch, it's very it's visible that he's, when the ball's at the end of the pitch, he's busy organising and he's got an authority about him. And, him and Edison are very similar in the style of play. You often see that Edison's, he's a bit more introverted. He's not as... is forceful with his coaching of the players in front of them, but it takes all sorts. What works for one person doesn't work for another. But I just think it's out of all those. I mean, you still look at Patricio. Wolves are coming out of not a great start of the season, but he's somebody who's just very consistent. You see the occasional flash of brilliance from him, but he's just 7, 8 out of 10 every week and very consistent. And with Kepa, I think that sometimes it can be difficult to adjust to a new league. And I think even last season, the first few games weren't great, but he's really grown into his time at Chelsea. And I think that we can argue whether he's worth the fee in the first place, but certainly he will be an asset to Chelsea in the long term.
And what have you made of Leno at Arsenal? I mean, the reason why I kind of put those four in the same group, because they've all got different varying degrees of quality of defences in front of them. So I'm just kind of thinking, on the face of it, Alisson has been a bigger success than Leno. Clearly, the stats will back that up. But if you factor in the defence that Leno's got in front of him and the defence that Alisson's got in front of him, do you give Leno a little bit of a... Have you been impressed with him considering that?
Yeah, that's all relative as well. You're right, and I think just mentioned Kepa's save percentage there, but he's actually faced the least amount of shots in the division as well. So, you know, you'd have to look and see what the quality of the chances are that the opposition are getting versus the shots that he's been able to save. But again, at the other end of the scale, you've got Leno, who's faced the more shots of the Premier League. And that tells your story. But then, I think it was either last season or the season before, where you have David De Gea, who usually sees goalkeepers at the bottom of the league. They're struggling, the teams are conceding a lot of chances. They're the ones who are normally at top of the shot charts, and yet David De Gea was up there last season, the season before. So it's, yeah, you have, as a goalkeeper, sometimes you have to worry about what's put in front of you, what you're made to do, rather than how the chances are coming your way. And of course, you can organise better and coach the players in front of you. It's a big part of goalkeeping, I've always thought. But Bernd Leno, when Edison was coming to Manchester City, he was on the shortlist of two. If they didn't get Edison, then Leno was the one that they were going to look to get in. So it just shows you how highly he's regarded, certainly by people in Man City. So I think
do you rate him, David? Do you rate him as a top keeper, or do you think there's a ceiling to be a top goalkeeper with Leno?
No, I think similar to a lot of keepers, at his level, who probably just below the very elite. I think you put him in a side where they've got better defensive foundations, and then you'll probably see him grow in confidence a little bit more, and then his performances will get better. But certainly with his feet, he is very, very good.
Mike, what's happened to De Gea, man? De Gea was I was a big fan of De Gea, still am. He seemed like he was superhuman, but as someone just earlier on mentioned, he has a little bit regressed. Obviously, he's in a team that's not particularly great at the moment, so you're going to, by consequence, face a lot more shots. But a lot of his fundamentals over the last two seasons, I've noticed, seem to be a bit rusty. What's going on there?
Firstly, excuse my voice in advance.
You come on a podcast and you can't talk.
I know, forgive me. It takes to David's point, what David was just saying about being able to command your defence. Being vocal as a keeper is one of the most important things. I think David would agree. He's not able to do that. He cannot command the defence. It looks like they're nervous at times, United. When I watch that defence, they're nervous. Compared to Schmeichel or Van der Sar, who... When the defence has that confidence in their keeper, naturally, you're confident. Because if you make a mistake, 9 times out of 10, they'll bail you out of trouble. Or if you make a mistake, Van der Sar will be onto you. Someone like De Gea, he's like Edison, he's an introvert as well. Maguire makes a mistake, nothing's going to happen. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like he needs to work on command of the area, being vocal, being a dominant goalkeeper before anything.
So is that something that as a keeper you can learn? That's a personality trait, I'm just assuming. Either you're that kind of person that is naturally a communicator and a talker and an organiser, or you're not. Can you learn that?
You can. You can learn that. It is something you can learn. Just basics, like, turn, shuffle across, keepers, anything, come back to me, go long, simple instructions, all of that, they make a big difference. But when there's nervousness amongst the defence and the goalkeeper, I saw he got stripped of captaincy.
He's not the guy.
He's not captain material.
But it's funny because I kind of felt, because in the first season, De Gea was getting bullied. Mm-hmm. People were putting strikers on him, corners were coming in and he couldn't. But I kind of felt that he had imposed himself for a little while. I don't know who was playing in front of him that season. Maybe the defenders had helped him. Mm-hmm. But so you think that he's actually maybe even regressed?
Do you know what I think? I think them times he wasn't playing under much pressure. When there's no pressure on you, you look fantastic.
There was a lot of pressure, bro.
I'm talking about, let's say, the last 3-4 seasons where he was like player of the season at United. There wasn't really any pressure then. Because you had City.
When he first came, defenders tried to bully him. because they he made one or two mistakes.
And he was young and he was small. Young. Yeah. Yeah.
And so Ferguson, Fergie
there was a bit of a time where, you know, people will swing the ball in the area and like strikers will try to get around him, bully him a little bit. And so Fergie took him out of the team and he came back in the team and he had to adjust to the league and he did kind of assert himself a bit more. So when like a striker will be next to him, he'll try and shove him out the way. But you have to remember, he was playing in with like Rio and I think Vidic at the time. It might have been Rio and someone else. Rio and Smalling or Rio and Vidic at the time. So he had like leaders at the back with him, right? And I think they kind of coached him
and protected him.
But he didn't really he wasn't that vocal still, so he wasn't commanding his defense in that sense. But he didn't have to. Whereas now, I think the defense in front of him for the past 3 or 4 years hasn't been that experienced or hasn't had that leader in the back line. Then you're kind of seeing
his flaws,
the flaws of him not being able to command that. Command his defence in that way. But that's just
I think there's definitely a case for that about the defence that's in front of you. You see Manchester United where the full-backs haven't been natural full-backs. They've been playing with Ashley Young, Valencia at right-back. They've tried every permutation of centre-back pairings, even back threes. It can affect the goalkeeper's performance because you need that relationship with defenders to almost second guess what they're going to do in front of you as well. And not only that, there's been changes behind the scenes with goalkeeping coaches. Now you talk about when David De Gea first came to the club. Yes, he had problems. They worked a lot in the gym and a lot with Eric Steele to sort of beef him up a little bit, make him physically stronger, work on his game a little bit, a lot more. And then there's been changes since. And then Emilio Alvarez from who we had at Atletico Madrid before he came to United. He was at the club for 3 years. Now he left and Richard Hartless is the goalkeeping coach now. So you've got that behind the scenes as well where people might be, coaches can be sort of, they'll be respectful of his strengths and not try to change those, but obviously trying to impress their sort of philosophy on him as well. So there's that behind the scenes as well. So it's nothing's been stable for him over the last 3 seasons.
Yeah. Do you think it's? I almost think it's no coincidence that Courtois and De Gea both dropped off under Jose Mourinho's management. Because with Courtois, I remember that. Courtois was brilliant. The first few weeks when he came to Chelsea, brilliant. Catching everything in the box, really commanding. Then he made a couple of mistakes in a week, which can happen in a keeper in the new league. But there was one where Jose just let him have it. Was the Charlie Adam chip.
Yeah.
And he was like, it wasn't even like that. Most managers would say that's just a freak because I can't remember if we drew or we still won the game anyway. But he was like, nah. I told him this is what Charlie Adam will do, and he'll do that. And I swear, he was never the same goalkeeper after.
That's a fair point. Mike, are we seeing, of late, this season in particular, with West Ham, Liverpool, and Manchester City, those three clubs in particular, the importance now of not only having a decent number two, but having a top number two?
Yeah. I think probably United have the best number two in the league. In Romero, but yeah, you need someone to step in, especially City and Liverpool, who are going for the title. Injury almost cost them. You definitely need a good
as a goalkeeper. If you know that you're good enough to probably play for, I don't know, start for 15 out of the 20 teams in the Premier League. if you know that you're good enough to start for the majority of teams in the league. But you're a top team and you're not starting. What's the mindset of a goalkeeper then? Do you think, well, I can play for most other teams. Maybe I'm not quite good enough for a top four team. Or do you try and just do what, the likes of, what's his name? Basically, what's the mentality when you're a top keeper but you're not playing as number one at a top team.
Basically, Mike is asking you, how do you deal with being a sub? Because he knows you.
But the difference is, if you're normal, back in the day, if you were a number two sub, you kind of accepted, I'm a number two sub.
I'm Cudicini, innit?
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Cudicini was good.
But he accepted it.
But nowadays, there are keepers at United, Romeo, he could probably play. Mm. What's the mindset of a goalkeeper that knows he can play for most clubs, but... I think
it's down to the manager, how he makes them feel included. Because there's cup competitions. Mm. If you're in Europe, you can be playing Europa. You could be playing the cup games. You could be playing Carabao Cup.
Well, Romeo knows he can play Premier League and Champions League for most teams.
Will he win a trophy at those teams?
Would he win a trophy at United?
He already has.
Someone like Fabianski, who took a lot of abuse at Arsenal.
He did.
I always said a lot from me. He's a top. His reflexes are unreal. Mm. Once he left, you actually saw, when he went to Swansea, you saw the level that he's capable of. So sometimes it does take you to move to another team before you can actually realise how good you are. Mm. But going back to your point, you need a top number two.
David, who's the best keeper in the world?
Oh, it's a very good question. I think at the moment you've got to be looking at two Brazilians in the Premier League plus Ter Stegen, I think. Overall, Jan Oblak again, I think. Is it a traditional goalkeeper, you've got to put Jan Oblak in there as well.
You've got to pick one. You've just bought a club. You're starting from scratch. You've got 150 million spent on a goalkeeper. Who are you buying?
I'll take Ederson.
Mike, you were not in your head already.
You know mine already.
You're Oblak, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So why would you put Oblak as the best in the world above Ederson?
He's brilliant. He's brilliant at everything. Even you guys mentioned his distribution. His distribution's good. His distribution's actually good. I'll take him over anyone. And he's been like that for the last
four or five years. I'll go with Ter Stegen.
Ter Stegen, yeah.
He's really improved. He would be my number two.
Why would you buy him?
I think his ground game is a lot better than Oblak's, and I think his all round game, I think he matches Oblak in shot stopping and command of area, but I think his distribution game and his game of his feet is better than Oblak's. That's why I put him ahead of him.
David, you're out in, is it Norway?
Sweden.
Sorry, you're out in Sweden doing some coaching out there with a club. When you're coaching and you're teaching, you're doing what you're doing out there, what's the most important thing that you are teaching and coaching with the guys out there? What now as a modern day goalkeeper? Is it fitness? Is it technique? Is it footwork? Is it agility? What, you're obviously doing all of those things, but what for you is the most important thing now for a goalkeeper to maximise his or her potential?
Yeah, I think especially when you first come into a club, you take a little bit of time to assess the keeper. You try and watch them as much as you can before you come into the place, which I did here at Östersunds. But it's first just to take a look at their all of the game, and particularly their technique, and just see if there's any minor flaws in the game. Certainly when you get to sort of first team level, it's sort of like the level we are at Allsvenskan here or any top league in Europe, you've got a certain level of goalkeeper anyway, and you're looking to improve on what's already there, the talent that they already have. And for me, and it's I've always been big on technique from going to, I played in Denmark for 4 years with Silkeborg and Odense, and there's a guy called Tom Sterrebor, worked with it at Odense. And he sort of blew my mind with all the technical detail that he went into with it in the training, and it was almost learning goalkeeping again at 32, and it changed my whole thing about it. And I think that sort of influenced me a lot, but also about, it is really trying to create match-type situations. So it's more about the mental side of the game, the decision making, than it is about the physical side. So of course you need the right technique, and certainly, like I said, at this level, you'd like to think that the technique is nailed down already before you get to this level. And then once you get into these situations, you try and recreate, certainly working towards a game on a Saturday or a Sunday, try and pinpoint a few areas where the opposition might be dangerous and what their strengths are, and then try and recreate them the best you can in a training session. Now, it's not always possible when you don't always have the numbers to work with to create that, but you certainly try and create it so enough so it's in the memory. And it's then once they've got to deal with those shots, it's not just straightforward shots from a coach or from one of the other goalkeepers. It's in put them in situations where multiple things can happen and they have to make decisions on the spot. Mm. So it's, again, I think that's one thing that's certainly come into the game the last few years, where it's less about the physical side, about less about how you stop it, and rather than trying to train the mind and the decision-making process so that you make the better decisions more often than not.
Josh, just briefly, if I could offer you the best goalkeeper in the world as opposed to the best striker in the world, which would you go with? Would you rather have the best keeper in the world and a good striker, or would you have the best striker in the world and an okay goalkeeper?
What do you mean by okay goalkeeper?
All right.
About Leno.
Akepa. Akepa. All right, Kepa's a good example.
Kepa.
Would you take... Yeah, Kepa's probably a top keeper. Kepa, without being in that.
Would you take a Giroud?
Elite five.
You're talking about Kepa versus like an elite striker, like a Giroud up front.
Yeah. Or would you take like Ter Stegen and a Ter Stegen? No, maybe better than Giroud. But
what?
Some.
You know, it's a difficult one. I
basically, do you value a top goalkeeper over a top striker?
I don't necessarily.
Okay.
But I do think that you need to have a certain level of goalkeeper, no matter what. Like, I think that you can get away with having a standard striker. If your goalkeeper is poor, you're gonna lose football games. Mm. But if you have an okay or a good goalkeeper, I'd rather have a good goalkeeper having a top striker rather than having just a good striker and a top goalkeeper, because I think goals win you games. Mm. So you need to score goals to win games. But I don't think you can have. I don't think you can have a less than good goalkeeper, if that makes sense.
Mm.
That's worse than.
Mike, who are the goalkeepers across Europe beyond the obvious ones that are coming through and the ones that you think in the next 5 to 10 years are gonna be the ones that we're going to be talking about?
Lafont.
Who, sorry?
Lafont.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, at front.
Yeah. He's good. Excellent. He's one to watch out for. Who are some? I think Rajkovic. That's your boy. He's another one that's really good. So those are my two to watch out for.
What about Henderson?
Dino. I like him. I really like him.
That sounds as it all, Mike. You didn't just say anything else.
Nah, do you know what? I really like him. Josh knows I like him, but...
You don't think he's got whether he's got a top ceiling?
Yeah, whether he's got to push to that next level, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure.
David, I'll give you the last word. Who are the goalkeepers that you think are coming through? In fact, before we answer that question, just briefly on England, I know that you've been you've been a big fan of Pickford. Is it as simple? Well, it's not simple. Why is it he seems to be really good for England, but there seems to be quite a lot of mistakes in his game at Everton, from what I see anyway? Because the defences on both teams isn't great.
No, but I think obviously the reason why he first came into the England squad is because he suited the way that Gareth Southgate wanted to play, you know. And to me, it seems like his distribution for England is certainly a lot better than it is for Everton. You know, I think when he first came into the side, it was, you know, he was just trying to hit the ball as far as he can, as hard as he could, you know. And not that it's changed drastically at the moment, but. Again, it's been the side who's been sort of hasn't been on top form, and he hasn't had a great deal of protection. And of course, usually when that happens, it does give a goalkeeper a chance to shine, and when he's worked a lot. But I still think there's a lot to come from him, and I think there's still a lot of maturing to be done by him, certainly in sort of game management. We've seen him get involved with fans, and sometimes that works for people, you know. Of course, I think there's the one that famous one Newcastle where he had a bit of chat with the fans behind the goal and then went on to make mistakes. And I think that's just a learning curve where he's just got to mature and he's got to focus on the football. But like I said, some people buzz off that. Some people, you know, lift the game when they're playing on the edge like that. But certainly, like I said, it's certainly more to come from him, like in a sort of a maturity and a steadiness to his game.
David, if you don't mind me asking. Do you think Pickford kind of reminds you of Joe Hart a bit?
Oh, jeez.
I know exactly where you're coming from. Certainly the way that he approaches games, that he's very wound up. But I think that the difference between the two of them is probably that, like I said, Jordan, he thrives off it a lot of the time. Now, he has come a cropper, like you said.
Yeah.
He does thrive off it, and he's always been like that. And his big strength, really, for me, is that he has this sort of, he's had this innocence about him where he hasn't lost that sort of, he's still a 15-year-old kid inside, and that's worked for him because he's been blinkered towards all the expectation, all the pressure, and he's just got on, and he's loved every step up, every time he stepped up from when he played for Alfred on loan in the National League, all the way through the leagues. He's sort of thrived on every time he's made that step up, and this is probably like the first time you have like a bit of a dip as a, you know, as a professional. It's took a long time coming for him, but he has had a little dip, and that's when you really find out the strength. And once you come through that,
definitely,
you'll be a far better goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And just briefly, David. Who? Same question to you. Who are the goalkeepers across Europe that are catching your eye and you think we should be looking out for?
Yeah, I mean, there's no surprise in some of them. I mean, like the big ones that are already known out there, but still young, likes of Andre Onana at Ajax. I'm sure he's due a huge move soon. Still only 23, and we keep. I mean, nobody's mentioned Gianluigi Donnarumma at the moment, and there's a lot of talk about him. Well, he's still playing for AC Milan, and he's only 20 year old. Mm.
Yeah, so much has happened.
There's a lot of talk about him going to Juventus either in January at the end of the season.
Wow.
And he's had a lot of controversy. You know, he had what he said, he wanted to leave, and he was convinced by the owners at the club that he should stay. So he signed a new contract, and he says he was forced under duress to sign that contract. But he's actually had a really steady time of late, and again, somebody who's maturing again. I can see him having a huge future and fulfilling the promise that he's shown. But I agree with Albin Lafont as well. You know, he hasn't made the progress that I thought he would, and he's still very young. You know, so he can still fulfil that promise as well. But you know, I think he's been sent back to League One to Nantes on loan. So he's still got to get his experience and get his game time as well. But I mean, there's lots all over Europe as well. You know, there's still at Schalke, they've got Alexander Nubel as well, who's billed as the next Neuer, and he's a very young keeper. He's just coming to the side last season as a number one. They've had a Ralph Farman who's at Norwich now, and again, he's another one that's just off the conveyor belt of the German goalkeepers, and I think he's probably one of the ones to look out for as well.
I just thought of another final question, and maybe you could settle an argument between me and Mike here. Hugo Lloris, was he ever really top shelf?
Oh, jeez.
Was he ever really in that Neuer, De Gea?
Respect a World Cup winner.
Was he ever? I mean, people are criticising him now and saying that he's on the downward slide. Mike has been a big fan of his up until what? Are you still batting for Lloris now? Or do you see now that he was always second tier? Okay, so Mike used to really bat for him back in the day. And I was never, even when he was playing really well, never convinced by Lloris. Am I being really harsh, or are we just seeing now what really was happening all along?
That's not about being harsh. It's not just, it's, you know, you see what you see and you make decisions. But I've always been a huge fan of Hugo, you know, and of course the mistakes have come along at a great rate over the last few seasons. But at the end of the day, I think he still contributes a lot to the side. I do like Gazzaniga at the moment. I think he's doing he's always done a great job. He's stepped in and I really like him as a keeper. But I still think that there's probably more to what's happened to Hugo over the last two seasons than probably meets the eye. There's a lot happening to him. You can see that he's explained about, you know, there's a big dip after you've won the World Cup. What's next for you to win? You know, motivation can be hard for. You see it with Olympic gold medal winners as well. You know, so there's all that to take into consideration. Plus, obviously, the drink driving as well. You know, it leads me to think there might be more things at hand there than just poor form. But I've always been a huge fan of him. He's got all distribution wise, maybe he's not brilliant. They try and keep everything short to to make sure that he doesn't have to be tested too much that way. But yeah, but I've always been a huge fan, and he's capable of some incredible saves. We've seen that over the last few years while he's been at Spurs.
David, cheers for your time, pal. Thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate that.
Every time, cheers, lad.
Thank you very much, David. I'm going to ask you finally. To the title race, how big a role do you feel the goalkeepers between City and Liverpool will play in terms of going forward? How big a role will Alisson and Ederson play in this title race?
Oh, good question.
What, not Kepa?
Oh, jeez.
Well, yeah, I mean, that does come into it. Yeah, Kepa. I'm probably Kasper Schmeichel as well. You know,
oh, wow.
But, yeah, I think it's crucial. And the reason why I think it's crucial is because they are both in teams that are that their style of play is suited to the way they goalkeeper. And in City's case in particular, they have a fragile defence. So they need to actually have a keeper who's performing behind it. So in that sense, yeah, I don't think it will be the determining factor, you know, in terms of, but I do think it will be a big key factor in the race in the end.
Bravo.
And you saw how... Was it?
Bravo's
really bad.
Is he really bad, or is just the gap between him and Ederson just big? Because Ederson is very, very good.
That Fabinho goal. It was a great shot.
I thought that was harsh.
It's not in the corner.
I thought people were being really harsh.
I don't know.
That's my issue with him and Pickford as well. They're too short.
Yeah, but if you look at Liverpool though, Liverpool had Adrian for the beginning of the season, and they found ways to make it work. Yeah. Maybe they weren't as expressive or expansive, but they found ways. Whereas City don't look that they can.
They also had a better defense in front of. So even with the keeper out, back to my question earlier on, your best keeper's out, but you've got a good back four in front of the second choice, then you can get away with it. Whereas with City, I'm not sure that they.
But
can.
It's just Liverpool generally. I think they find better ways to cover their weaknesses at the moment.
That's a fair point.
City don't have a good defence. I don't think they have a good defence. Even their strongest defence.
Adrian made a few mistakes, but it's like Liverpool seem to. Yeah, it's like they seem to be able to navigate. So if he makes a mistake, they concede, but they'll score three or something. Like that.
Yeah, doesn't matter as much. Mike G, Josh, cheers for coming on this week's pod. Don't forget to subscribe to us on all of our socials. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and iTunes, and follow us across all of our socials. Leave a comment, tell a friend. You know what to do. Until next week, peace.